And we're talking with Mike McCoy. His latest book is called Asteroids, Bridge to Nowhere. We're going to continue chatting with him about that. We'll get into it in a little broader scale when we come back, and also, of course, take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're back with Mike McCoy. Mike, you've gone from being an international businessman and entrepreneur to an expert on asteroids overnight almost, huh?
Yep. It's amazing what you can learn by Googling.
We were talking about the book Asteroids, Bridge to Nowhere. It's a novel. It's got a great ending. We can't give that away, but tell me, how many more characters do you have in the book?
Well, there's quite a few characters. There's some multiple storylines that go, and some end halfway through the book and others carry on. But the main character is an astrophysicist from Caltech who's hoping to get a grant approved so he can study some things he sees out in space. And he gets invited to this seminar in Washington, D.C., quite a surprise, to give a presentation. But unwittingly, he's kidnapped by a rogue part of the government that knew the asteroid storm was coming.
Trying to keep him quiet.
They want to keep all the scientists quiet, so they've had a lot of seminars. And he's actually the last one before the asteroid storm comes. He discovers what is happening and tries to escape. He's taken to an underground city where the few and the fortunate are being cared for and working and living down there in these underground cities. And he tries to escape and get home to his family.
Somebody would go public, probably on my show, if something like this were happening.
You'd think so. Yeah. Yes. But in the book, there's a war going on. The U.S. is just trying to recover from getting out of this war. Budgets have been cut and things like that. So this group really works very hard to keep it quiet.
What would you say to your child? Let's say you had a little one. If you knew an asteroid were coming this way, would you even tell them?
I think it depends on, do we have time to prepare or not?
No, you don't have time.
Yeah, then maybe not. You don't want to frighten. You try to do whatever you can to try to survive.
Gosh, is there any pain involved with this, or is it just incineration instantly?
It depends on, how large the impact is and how far away you are from it. If it's not very big, in the book, there's some small asteroids that land up in the San Gabriel Mountains, and the people living down in Long Beach are like, it happened up there. It's one in a million. On the news, they say it will never happen again. It's, your 500-year flood, and it doesn't really affect people.
I don't want to get too morbid here, Mike, but I've always wondered if, people, like in a car crash, if it's done quickly, if they even feel any pain at all or if they suffer.
Yeah, probably not. If it's something sudden and if it was something, like an asteroid storm, like in my example of a 500-foot asteroid impacting Earth, if you're 6 miles away, you feel an earthquake and you're like, wow, what's that, happening. You may not even hear the sound yet, but 29 seconds later, you're blown away by a 1,000-mile airburst.
And what happens to the rays of the sun when something like that happens? How dark is everything going to be, and for how long?
Yes, if they're, in the example of the book, an asteroid storm, there are asteroids impacting Earth all around the world, and there's enough dust and debris blown up into the atmosphere that we could have a, like a nuclear winter. The bad guy in the book is like, if we can't, we can't save everybody, and they're going to starve or whatever anyway. There's nothing we can do.
Let's take some calls here for you. We'll pick it up by going to Bernie in Locust Grove, Virginia, east of the Rockies, to get us started. Hi, Bernie.
I think it's funny. You're talking about an asteroid striking the Earth when there's a people out there that want to reduce the population under 500 million.
Some do. That's true.
Okay. And do I own the Matrix?
I don't follow you.
Well, I had a dream about it. Somebody asked me, do you own the Matrix?
I still don't follow you.
Yeah, I don't follow the dream.
You take the red pill instead of the blue pill.
But I guess he's trying to come up with the point that there are some that would like to see this planet reduced to 500 million people, and maybe an asteroid strike is the way to go. I don't think so. I think that ruins everything for everybody.
It does. And maybe he's referring to the Georgia stones where the writing...
The guide stones. Yeah,
talk about that. But yeah, this would be, you know, be, if there were an asteroid storm like described in the book, it's devastating. You know, lots, millions and millions of people are wiped out and die. And it's not the best way one would want to reduce the population.
We're going to Joe in Buffalo, New York on the wildcard line. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Great topic. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Hey, like, two quick questions. First one is, we're all aware of the asteroids heading toward Earth. Do we consider the opposite? The Earth is traveling through space. What if the Earth is on path to stationary or an asteroid that's not really moving that fast, like opposite impact? Is that considered at all?
I think they're all moving at a tremendous clip. Mike, aren't they?
Yes, everything is in motion. You know, our planets are rotating around the sun. The sun in our solar system and the heliosphere, this, you know, huge billion-mile bubble that we're in, is traveling and rotating around the Milky Way. It takes about 220 to 240 million years for our solar system to make a complete orbit around the Milky Way.
I know where Joe's coming from. He's thinking the asteroid is like just floating there and the planet comes at it.
Well, the danger is that, you know, we have these spirals, arms in the Milky Way, and we're inside or at the edge of one of them, and we're moving through an area. We could go through a cloudy area or an area that has lots of debris. So, you know, and we may be going through a cloud now or maybe have just come out of one. So, yeah, there's things out there that our solar system could run into.
Joe, you had a second question. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, thanks, George. Yeah, second question is, you'd mentioned how a grain of sand would light up the sky. How come, or has ever happened, where a grain of sand, or even a little larger, has never hit an astronaut while out skywalking out in space?
Now, that's interesting you say that. I think they have been hit by things like that, and fortunately, it hasn't punctured a suit or anything. But wasn't there a story, Mike, several years ago, of the International Space Station got dinged by something?
Oh yes, I'm sure it has. You know, just recently the ISS sprung a leak, and nobody knows exactly how that happened.
And they stopped the leak with some gum.
Yes, so you know, I don't know that in that case it was a meteoroid, but could have been.
The Russians are very coy about what they think happened. I don't know why.
Yeah, well, somebody probably maybe, you know,
punctured it.
Driver in the wrong place or something. Yeah.
Never know. Let's go to John in the state of Washington, west of the Rockies. John, go ahead, sir.
Hi.
Hi there.
I have a question and a suggestion for bumper music.
All right. Let's take the question first.
Okay. What if we do sandbags to wear down the asteroid? I'm thinking of a multi-warhead rocket that has the warheads changed out to tubes filled with sand that are directed at the asteroid periodically.
How much sand would that take, Michael?
Yeah, it would take a lot because, you know, imagine the new Elon Musk Star Cruiser rocket ship. That is still in development. It will be able to take 100 tons of cargo to Mars or the Moon, and 100 tons of sand being sandblasted at an asteroid probably wouldn't do much.
No, I don't think it would stop at all. But
you need something with a lot of mass, and the problem is it's very difficult for us to launch things from Earth that have lots and lots of mass.
What's your bumper music, John?
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, like sending a multi-head rocket, you would have several chances to fire at an asteroid. The bumper music is air.
Air?
Air. It's not an air. Its title is Air. I've only heard it once on a classical station.
Do you know who the group is or the artist?
No.
Air. Just A-I-R?
Right.
All right. We'll check it out for you and see what we can come up with. We've got an expert here in the field of music, and I'm sure he'll be able to find out if it exists. Mike's with us in Denver. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks so much for having me tonight. Excellent show on meteors. Mike, I'm a big fan of your books. And, you know, even though they're works of fiction, I think there's a lot of truth that could be deciphered in them. I did have a comment for you and then kind of a question. So back in 2012, a geologist by the name of Rob DePalma discovered the asteroid that actually took out the dinosaurs in North Dakota. It's called the Talus site. And it was a two-year excavation of this site. And they actually were able to determine when these fish and dinosaurs and by their fossils, when they died after the asteroid strike. And I think it's really interesting. And I think George would agree with me that even though this is a one in a 500 million year event, that it could happen again. Where did you get the inspiration to write your books on meteorites and asteroids?
You know, it's when you know when you have a book idea, you have this kind of little kernel of thought and think, oh well, this, and you kind of know the end, you know, and a little bit of the beginning, and you start researching and writing and whatnot, and it really just kind of developed from a small little idea.
And where do we get the book, Michael? I assume Amazon.
Amazon.com and pretty much anywhere ebooks are found.
We got to sell books on Amazon so Jeff Bezos can pay the mortgage of that $165 million house.
Yeah, hopefully everybody will buy enough. He can buy another house.
I would guess he has no mortgage. What do you think?
Probably not. No.
Isn't that on me? But you know what? More power to him. Here's a guy who came up with an idea to sell books online and look at what happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
I have no problems with Jeff.
Next up, we go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
George, thank you for taking my call. Mike, great subject. Comment and then a question. And, you know, if you can imagine, you know, a water well on a farm, okay, and if you can imagine being at the bottom of that water well and you're looking up, and somebody is throwing rocks at you from the top of the well. Mm. And even if you had a rifle, you know, there's not very much that you can do to defend yourself, you know, against those rocks. And so where I'm leading to is many authors have talked about the military aspects of gravity well kinetic weapons, okay? And it's not, I mean, all you have to do is look at the surface of the moon and realize, okay, the moon has been hit by something, you know, large objects, small objects, that type of thing. But from a military perspective, you don't need atomic bombs or plasma beams, you know. All you need is space debris, and you leverage the gravity well of the Earth, you know. And many authors have talked about this, you know, that you could just literally throw debris at the Earth's surface and create havoc. And Coast to Coast guest James McCanney has written essays that underground military bases may not really help you during an asteroid strike, you know, that actually there may be more damage in the underground bases from an impact than, you know, being on the surface of the Earth. So I was wondering if you would, again, many authors have written about this going back 70 or 80 years, the idea of defending ourselves militarily against space debris, okay? I mean, Jerry Pournelle used to say that you could take a box of crowbars, you know, and drop them from space and devastate a large city, because there's not really, it's like being at the bottom of that farm water well. You know, you're looking up, and there's not really much that you can do to defend yourself from somebody throwing rocks from the top of the well to the bottom of the well. And so, anyway, I was wondering if you would discuss the military. There's been many essays circulated within the military. I know within 40 years ago, within SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative, there were essays circulated about using plasma beams and that to defend, but I'm not so sure. You see what I mean? I'm not.
Well, there's been a lot of discussion, like we spoke about before, of laser ablation, you know, trying to use a laser to try to change the direction of an asteroid. And you know, we talked about the DART mission that's going to be a test of a high-velocity impact to try to move an asteroid. In the book, as I was writing the book, I searched around for some type of planetary defense weapon, and I found a research essay, research report, by a guy named Bong Hui from Iowa State Planetary Defense Department, and they had a kinetic impactor with a nuclear device. So you have this high-velocity impactor at the end of about a 30-foot boom, followed by a nuclear explosive device. And the impactor is meant to create a small crater in the asteroid so that the nuclear device can have a subsurface explosion, and that's much more effective than exploding next to the asteroid. So I call it Harpoon in the book, and Bong Hui helped me make sure that it's all accurate, and so it's probably a little bit too techie in the book. But in the book, we use three harpoons to try to disrupt an asteroid that's coming that's going to wipe out Earth.
What about the Secret Space Force? What if its mission is to do something like that, and that's wipe out an asteroid?
I hope so. I mean, we have a Space Force. You know, we have this Russian, I think it's two Russian satellites now chasing an American satellite. So maybe Space Force is very timely because we need to protect our assets in the near-Earth orbit. But beyond that, you know, we have all these commercial companies that are planning to take trips to the moon and Mars. And I think the government wants to have a Space Force to make sure that it's controlled and regulated. We don't want the wild, wild west on the moon.
Spell out your website, Michael.
MikeMcCoy.org.
M-I-K-E?
M-C-C-O-Y.
All righty. Stick with us. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you as we talk about the possibility of a threat of asteroids hitting the planet Earth. It could be devastating. I've always said it's just not if, but when. And I hope the when is thousands and thousands of years away from us, at least. So we'll be back in a moment. And then next hour, we'll be talking about demonic forces right here on Coast to Coast AM. So just keep your dial right where it is on your favorite radio station. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. Mike McCoy with us, our final segment. What are the chances, Mike, of the book Asteroids Bridge to Nowhere being turned into a big movie?
Well, it depends on your listening audience. Hopefully there's a movie producer.
That has happened before with some guests.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
The producers heard them and they've taken it away, but you don't have an agent or anybody like that who can pitch it for you?
Not yet. But I have, you know, people who have read the book say, wow, this could be a movie. So you never know.
You never know. And then how spiritual would people become if they told them an asteroid was headed this way? We don't know how devastating it'll be. It's about 2 miles long. So if it does hit, it's going to take out a chunk of the planet. You think people would find God quickly?
Yes. I think, well, you know, a portion of the population would find God. The other portion would break into Best Buy and take everything they could.
That could happen. Riots, looting, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they're not going to tell us.
Yes. You know, in the book, the government initiate something they call the Bliss Protocol, because they feel people will be you know, it's better off overall if they find out at the last minute than if they had time to plan.
Oh, absolutely. Big Island we go. Frank's with us in Hawaii, west of the Rockies. Hey, Frank.
Hey, George. Good show. Good show.
I love it.
I was going to ask your guest, has he ever taken the tour of Old Yucca Mountain?
I don't know, Michael. And tell us a little bit about that, Frank.
Well, I took the tour back when they were having the tours, and they were saying that that place was built to withstand three consecutive meteor strikes or like half dozen nuclear hits.
Now it's a storage bank for radioactive material, isn't it?
Well, they closed it from what I understood. They put the kibosh on it, so they spent $100 billion to build it and do nothing with it.
So maybe they're really going to do something else with it.
So they say, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. That would, you know, if it can take a meteor or two, I would think that would be a good location for, you know, a little.
Yeah, well, in the book, bunker. There is an underground city in near Las Vegas. So
intriguing indeed. Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it. Stacy's with us in Kansas City, Missouri. You got to be happy with that Super Bowl game, Stacy, huh?
Very happy with the Chiefs.
Everybody is. It was quite a game.
Okay. My question was, why are all the near-Earth objects, most of them are closer than a lunar distance recently? And I'll take my answer off air.
All right. And she was talking about that 40,000-mile type.
Yeah. I mean, there have been a lot, you know, and if you search Google and ask for, you know, recent nearby flybys, there have been a lot and they're close, but if you go to the Minor Planet Center and look at all the ones that they're following, I think I counted 32 close approaches between now and April. None of them are within one lunar distance. So it's really not the, you know, again, not the ones they're tracking, but the ones that surprise us that fly by and we're like, oh, what was that? And that's the danger.
Let's go to Miami. Frank's with us. Welcome to the program. Hi, Frank.
Hey, how are you, George?
Great.
This is Frank. I wanted to ask Mike a question about a movie that was starring Bruce Willis called Armageddon.
You go, yeah, great movie.
A team of astronauts landed on top of, or they weren't astronauts, they were oil well drillers. They landed on an asteroid, incoming planet Earth, and put a bomb inside the asteroid. Is something like that possible?
It sure is. And then Bruce Willis stayed on the asteroid because he had to detonate personally. You remember that movie, Michael?
Yeah. Somebody had to be there to blow it up. It's possible. It all depends on how much time we have. If we have years to
prepare for
notice
it
and plan, then, you know, I think it takes years to be able to put something like that together. Things are getting better, though, because we have Blue Origin, we have SpaceX, we have other, commercial launch facilities that could get a spacecraft up faster. But, you know, how many megatons would that be? And would it be enough? You know, it depends on the size, the density, the composition of the object, if you can really blow it up or not.
Mike, this discussion about mining on an asteroid, isn't that a little wacky?
Oh, I think it's going to be fun.
How are they going to do that?
Well, I mean, there's some pretty big asteroids. We went to Vesta and Ceres already. Ceres is 600 miles, I think, in diameter.
Yeah, but we didn't get there with cranes and hose and things like that, and then fill it up and, you know, put it in a rocket and launch it back up.
Yeah, but I think...
How are they going to do that?
Well, you know, with many launches. But I think we'll be mining the moon first, because there are a lot of resources on the moon. The regolith, the moon dust, has a lot of oxygen and minerals and things. So you can actually process the regolith and make water and get hydrogen and create rocket fuel. There's a lot of things they can do. You could have a moon base that is the launching platform to go on and mine other asteroids.
Let's go to Glenn in Buffalo, New York. Hi, Glenn. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing, George?
Okay.
I have two questions. One of the questions are, yesterday morning at 5 a.m., a meteorite came in and hit in India, and it left a crater 20 feet in diameter, and I don't know about the depth.
Boy, they lucked out on that, didn't they?
Yeah, but it didn't hit in a populated area. It hit just outside a populated area.
Uh-huh.
And I'm waiting for to hear about it.
Where was that?
I'm waiting to hear about it.
I think it was in India.
Oh, India.
Yes, it was.
Well, yeah, it might take some time to get the news out, but I'm not surprised. I mean, there are 500 impacts a year, according to the I have it here. One of the planetary science institutes that 500 meteorites have strike the Earth every year. So they're usually pretty small. If you're talking about a 20-foot crater, then that was a pretty good sized one.
What else you have for us, Glenn?
It was probably the other one is about Apophis, the god of chaos, the Egyptian god of chaos.
Yep, that's out there.
Okay, it's far enough. It's heading out around the sun right now. It's like 1,400 feet in length or something like that. In space, there's no resistance. So I think a shock wave far enough out will push it out of alignment, because I think that thing is going to rock us.
What do you think of a shock wave, Michael, to knock that out? Because he's right, it's going to get close.
It's going to get close. I think in 2029. I think, you need something bigger than a shockwave. One Mrs. Plesko, I can't remember her title, but she said you either need to have a nuclear weapon or a cannonball, and a cannonball that's moving very high velocity with as much mass as possible, because, that Apophis is not a small object. It has a lot of mass, so it's going to take a lot to move it.
April 13th. 2029 is the projected date that it could hit the planet.
Yep, mark your calendars.
Jeez. That's an ominous date. Rusty in Leroy, Illinois, welcome to the program. Hey, Russ, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me on, George.
Sure thing.
I just heard something within this last year that didn't a Japanese ship or a Chinese ship land on an asteroid?
Yes. Sure did.
Hayabusa, I think it was.
And it connected to an asteroid?
Yeah, it landed right on it.
Yeah, and then what happened with that? I didn't hear anything else.
I think it's gone black now, hasn't it, Mike?
I think one of the rovers went black, but I think it's planned, because it had like three different rovers and things. They're planning to actually try to bring back samples.
Oh, and so it's going to leave the asteroid? Is that correct?
I don't know if it did or not.
Yeah, I haven't heard the status of it. But we have a spacecraft called OSIRIS-REx that is at asteroid Bennu right now. And I don't think Bennu has landed yet, but they're planning to land and take samples and return the samples back in 2023.
Interesting. Well, it was definitely a successful landing, wasn't it?
Yes, on the Japanese one. Yeah, yeah, we had some pictures and things like that. Yeah, but I don't know the current status.
It's a 7-year mission. So okay, I'm going to get some info on that. And I'll get it to us before we go off the air. Our staff is quick. Doug in Long Island, New York, first time caller. Hey, Douglas, go ahead.
Oh, hey, George. Great program. I just have a question, a really short one. Since the Earth is covered more by water than by landmass, if a large enough asteroid were to come and strike the oceans, wouldn't we be unprepared for tsunamis? I mean, this wouldn't realize were happening.
Yes, it's a real it's a possibility. I mean, I've read different people. Some people say no, it'll just make a big splash and there won't be a tsunami. Other people say yes, definitely. But it depends on where it is and how close to shore and things. But yeah, I believe there would be definite risk of tsunami.
Exactly. Okay, in 2005, Hayabusa landed on the asteroid, lifted up, grabbed a few samples, and landed back here with a spacecraft in 2010. So it was very successful.
That was the first one. There's a second one. So there's a second mission that's, I think, still ongoing.
I don't think it's even.
The one that went black.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. Next up, we've got Jerry in Everett, Washington. Welcome to the program. Hey, Jer, welcome.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm curious, what would happen if an asteroid took out the moon? What would and didn't do any harm to the Earth except for tides and weather and all of that stuff.
Well, I tell you what, we need the moon there for all kinds of reasons, and without the moon, I think we'd be up a creek, Michael.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'd be in big trouble. You know, it's been hit so many times, obviously we can see, you know, and we've got pictures of the dark side of the moon now, and it's very pockmarked. So it would take, I think, really big asteroid to smash into it to break up the moon.
Oh, yeah, huge.
Yes.
I mean, it would kick dust. The dust from the moon impact would come our way, I'm sure, wouldn't it?
Yes, it could. And then we'd have, you know, more shooting stars and meteoroids.
Oh, my God. The sky would be lit up for forever.
That's right.
Let's go to South Florida. Kent's with us. Hey, Kent, go ahead, sir.
How you doing tonight?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Just a question. I'm an old military guy like you are. And
thank you. Thanks for sharing.
I would like people to know, what would it take? I mean, I'm in South Florida, so I've got a little bitty box full of stuff that's supposed to last me 14 days. But if something really bad, what would it take for someone to exist for a little bit so we could get our crap back together?
Well, you'd have to have storable food. You'd have to have water. The problem with all of this, and Mike, you would concur, is we don't know how long we have to last, right?
That's right. Yeah, it depends on the damage that's caused. You know, in my book, it's an asteroid storm, and there are asteroids coming every night. And so there's more damage done every night. The power grid goes out. There's no data or electricity or anything. And, and you don't know how long it's going to last. So
no, you don't.
You know, you need to...
you can stockpile for 2 months, and you may need it for 2 years.
That's right. And luckily, some of the characters in the book have a hideaway, which is beyond the Bridge to Nowhere, and they are well prepared to last for a long time.
Would you want us be on a planet that was back in the Dark Ages? If you literally were living like cavemen?
No, it would be. I think most people just couldn't handle it.
No, they have already predicted for just the United States. If there's an X flare that cuts off the power grid or an EMP attack, a nuke in the atmosphere that shuts off the power grid, 90% of the American population would be gone over the course of a year. 90%.
Yeah, most people don't, you know, you go to the grocery store, they don't know how the food got there. It's just there, you know.
Well, there won't be any grocery stores if something like this happens.
Not after a day or two.
Mike in Connecticut. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. How you been?
All right, thanks. Good to hear from you.
First of all, underground bunkers for government personnel, they don't care about us. They would not tell us.
They will not tell us.
If there's an asteroid or a meteor coming.
I don't think so either.
They can't handle hurricanes, the after effects. They can't handle Katrina. They couldn't handle the hurricanes in Texas. They can't handle the hurricanes and tornado.
They definitely couldn't handle an asteroid strike.
FEMA is full. Every government agency, including FEMA, they're a bunch of check collectors.
Well, you do have a point there, Michael. You do have a point. And speaking of Michaels, Mike McCoy, we're almost out of time. Tell people where they can get your book.
You can get it on Amazon.com. or anywhere ebooks are sold, or you can go to there's also a link to Amazon on my website, mikemccoy.org, and there's some news and articles there about, you know, technology and some other things about asteroids on the website. As I was writing this book, I was really writing it for the Coast to Coast audience. So I think there's a lot of things in here with conspiracy theories and things like that this audience will really enjoy, and at least I hope they do.
All right. Thank you, Mike. It's great having you on the program, and good luck with the book. Hope it's turned into a movie. Up next, Jeffrey Seelman joins us, back with us. We are going to be talking about his work with demonic spirits and how they are acting upon the world right now.